Each Wednesday, WOOC interviews someone from the local community. Today, we are joined by Tom Ellis. Tom lives in Albany and works as a teacher. He is a leader in several social justice groups, including the Palestinian Rights Committee of the Upper Hudson Peace Action. Tom, what peace activities are you currently involved in?
Okay. Well, I'm heavily involved with the Palestinian Rights Committee, and we're going to have a vigil on Friday at 6 to 7 p.m. at Dana Park in Albany in support of the people in the Gaza Strip. They are demanding their right to return to their former homes. A lot of people don't know, but about two-thirds of the people who live in the Gaza Strip, or about 1.3 million out of 2 million people in total, are either refugees from Israel, from what became Israel in 1948, or their children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. And these people have not been allowed to return to their properties. Some of them can go up to the top of a tall building in Gaza City, look out over the border, and they can see the properties where they used to live or where their families used to live, and yet they can never return to them. And they're furious because, you know, 70 years is a long time to be exiled, and they see many Jewish settlers and colonists from around the world moving into Israel, into where they used to live, and it's like, well, why is there room for Jewish people from around the world to come here, and yet those of us who are from here were never allowed to come back? And Gaza is small. It's between 5 and 7 miles wide, and it's about 26 miles long. Israel has a border, a wall around most of it, and Egypt has a wall along a little speck of it, a couple of miles. And Israel not only has that border wall around it, but they insist that there has to be this buffer zone of several, like 400 or 500 meters wide inside of the wall of Gaza, where Palestinians are not allowed to travel or to be at all. And this is about 1/6 of all of the land in Gaza and about 1/3 of their farmland. So the Palestinians are not only restricted inside the Gaza Strip, but they're restricted to like 5/6 of it. And when Palestinians walk into that buffer zone, and they never know how wide it is until the Israeli soldiers start shooting at them, which they did on March 30th, and they killed at least 15 or 16 Palestinians, and they injured, Palestinian health officials are saying that at least 1,500 people were injured, about half of them with live ammunition. And the Israeli prime minister praised the soldiers for having done a great job and for allowing Jewish Israelis to have a peaceful Passover. So we're going to have a vigil at Dana Park, which is at the corner of Lark Street, Madison Avenue, and Delaware Avenue in Albany, on Friday, this Friday, from 6 to 7 p.m., calling for the United States to end its support for the Israeli abuse of the Palestinians, and for the Israelis to end that abuse, and for the Israelis to allow the Palestinians to reform, to return to their properties. So that's one thing I'm involved with.
So, I mean, one thing that, I mean, this whole incident seems to have not been very well covered by, you know, the American media. And from what I gathered, maybe 15,000 Palestinians were planning maybe a month-long protest at the Gaza Wall in about 5 or 6 different locations. So it was an enormous number of people. And they approached the fence, the wall, and at some point the Israeli military started shooting, and they hit an enormous number of people. And there have been worldwide calls for an investigation. Clearly, this is a war crime. And I believe, once again, the United States is the one.
The United States blocked at the United Nations Security Council a few days ago passage of a resolution that would have called for an unbiased investigation into what happened.
So is there any way for, you know, people to get this type of, you know, legal remedy? I mean, I don't really remember many situations on the planet where peaceful protesters are shot and this type of number, and there's no legal, you know, accountability for what they did.
Well, Israel has been able to act with impunity for many decades. This is it's not really anything new. In 1976, Israel shot over 100 Palestinians who lived in Israel, Israeli citizens, who were protesting the theft of their land, the continuous theft. This was in 1976. and 6 got killed and more than 100 got wounded. And the Palestinians learned that day that they really have no rights. The Israeli government will not respect them as people, and that they're just going to gun them down because the Israelis are determined to either take all of the land or nearly all of the land, no matter what anybody thinks. And the United States is the enabler here because the United States blocks these resolutions at the Security Council. And if the United States didn't block the resolutions, the Security Council would pass, I think, strong sanctions against Israel, similar to what got passed on South Africa or North Korea or Iran or some of these other countries. And so the United States protects Israel. And the United States shouldn't do that. The United States also provides Israel with about $10 million in military aid every day. And Israelis constantly using some of those weapons to kill the Palestinians and to terrorize them and to limit their movement.
In my notes, I see that the Israeli military killed 17 and wounded over 700. But you mentioned something like 14 or 15 killed, but 1,500 injured is...
Yeah, the Palestinian health officials in the Gaza Strip were saying that more than 1,500 were injured, 750 of them with live ammunition. Some of them were shot with rubber bullets, which is it's like about the size of a marble with a solid metal core and a very thin layer of rubber around the outside, maybe 3 or 4 millimeters thick, which can be deadly. It can be fatal if you're hit by it. And some of them were injured by tear gas. An Israeli general said that they, before this demonstration began, said that they had 100 snipers ready on or near the wall to deal with anybody who got out of line. 100 snipers, can you imagine?
And changing subjects right now, today is the 50th anniversary of Dr. King's assassination, which occurred in Memphis on April 4th in 1968. Now, he was supporting a strike by garbage workers. Public opposition to
Sanitation workers.
Well, okay, sanitation workers. Public opposition to Dr. King increased as he spoke out more strongly, not just against economic justice issues, but the U.S. role in Vietnam. Do you have any thoughts on him, his work, and his legacy?
Oh, yeah, I've been thinking about King a lot in the last few weeks, and I've read several biographies of him over the years. I've taught my students about him. I think he was one of the most impressive people who's ever lived in the United States. And during those last few years of his life, he was trying to do everything. He was helping the workers. He was trying to convince people, white people in the North, that racism was still a huge problem in the North. He was opposing the war in Vietnam. He was still working for civil rights in the South. He was very impressive. And I don't know what else to say, just a truly great man.
You know, Tom, I've known you over the years, and, you know, you're also very active in the environmental movement. So I'm sort of curious about the intersection about the environmental movement and the peace movement. And I kind of remember one of the issues you worked on was also the use of perhaps depleted uranium by the American military. I guess literally hundreds of thousands of people, particularly in Iraq, were impacted upon that. But, you know, what are some of those, that intersection between the environment and the peace that you've worked on over the years?
Thank you. That's, yes, that's true. Some of the earliest depleted uranium weapons ever made were manufactured in Colony, New York, at what was called NL Industries, which had been previously called National Lead Industries. It's at 1130 Central Avenue. If you're traveling on Central Avenue heading west, you go under the underpasses where the Amtrak bridge is and I-90. You come up a little hill, and it's on there. It's on the left. It's an empty field now. It's 11 acres. And they manufactured depleted uranium weapons there in 1979, and they were shut down in 1980 by the state government after NL signed a consent agreement, and then they didn't abide by it, and they had high emissions. A British scientist who worked for our community group, he and his colleagues determined, looking at all of the emission reports and the soil surveys, that about 5 tons of uranium had been emitted into the atmosphere there. And most of it had come down on the building or on the property. And as you go further out, there's less of it. And the federal government spent about $200 million in 25 years removing more than 100,000 cubic meters of soil. So they scraped the topsoil And then frequently they had to dig down into the ground because NL Industries had a tendency to just bury many things on site. And they did this from about 1987 until into the, about 2010 or so. So the property is empty now. But this is the intersection of war and environmental issues. I worked with a community group. We monitored the cleanup. We became friendly with some of the workers who were doing the cleanup. We insisted that a couple of times the project manager said to us that they were getting pressure to clean it up quick. And we said the community group is unanimous that we want the job done correctly, even if it takes longer, that we don't want you to take any shortcuts here. And so the property, in my view, the 11 acres that NL owned has been cleaned up very well. I wouldn't build a school on it, and I wouldn't dig into the ground more than a few feet because there is some lead. If you go down 10 feet, there's still some lead there. But I think that the property is clean enough that it could be used for a ball field, I think, as long as people aren't digging into the ground. And I think the federal government will eventually sell the property, and some of the local people want to build a highway ramp off of 85 onto Central Avenue there. These weapons were used in, I don't know if the weapons made in Colony were used in Iraq or in Yugoslavia or in Afghanistan, but other depleted uranium weapons were used extensively by the Americans and to a lesser extent by the British in Iraq in particular, but also in Afghanistan and parts of the former Yugoslavia.
Well, and also that the military has sort of a mixed record when it comes to, say, its environmental impact. I think it's one of the biggest sources of toxic waste. And while they actually have done an okay job in terms of using or deploying more renewable energy, aren't they the also single largest user of fossil fuels or one of them?
Certainly one of them. I mean, just think of the Air Force wants to build a whole fleet of new planes, and the purpose of those planes will be to refuel other airplanes while they're in the air. So that way an Air Force plane could take off from Vandenberg Air Force Base in California, fly east across the United States, be refueled over the Atlantic, and then in the air, then be refueled again in the air over the Mediterranean, and then maybe bomb Syria or Yemen or Sudan or any of the other countries the United States is bombing. And then it would fly back to California being refueled twice in the air. I mean, to me, that is one of the most wasteful things imaginable, to build airplanes that refuel other airplanes while they're in the air. I mean, it's just idiotic in my view.
Well, Tom, we want to thank you for joining us as part of our weekly peace segment. If people want to find out more about the Palestinian Rights Committee or any other peace groups you're involved with, how best can they do that?
Probably the best way is to contact me by email. It's TomEllis107, so TOMELLIS107 @gmail.com.